This is Audible.
Audible, Inc. presents Shipbreaker, written by Paolo Bacigalupi, narrated by Joshua Swanson.
Chapter 1. Naylor clambered through a service duct, tugging at copper wire and yanking it free. Ancient asbestos fibers and mouse grit puffed up around him as the wire tore loose. He scrambled deeper into the duct, jerking more wire from its aluminum staples. The staples pinged about the cramped metal passage like coins offered to the scavenge god, and Naylor felt after them eagerly, hunting for their dull gleam and collecting them in a leather bag he kept at his waist. He yanked again at the wiring. A meter's worth of precious copper tore loose in his hands, and dust clouds enveloped him. The LED glow paint smeared on Naylor's forehead gave him a dim green phosphorescent view of the service ducts that made up his world. Grime and salt sweat stung his eyes and trickled around the edges of his filter mask. With one scarred hand, he swiped at the salty rivulets, careful to avoid rubbing off the LED paint. The paint itched and drove him crazy, but he didn't relish finding his way back out of the maze-like ducts in blind blackness. So he let his forehead itch and again surveyed his position. Rusty pipes ran ahead of him, disappearing into darkness. Some iron, some steel. Heavy crew would be the ones to deal with that. Naylor only cared about the light stuff. The copper wiring, the aluminum, the nickel. The steel clips that could be sacked and dragged out through the ducts to his light crew waiting outside. Naylor turned to continue down the service passage, but as he did, he banged his head on the duct ceiling. The noise from his collision echoed loud, as if he were sitting inside a Christian church bell. Dust cascaded into his hair. Despite the filter mask, he started coughing as powder leaked in around the poorly sealed edges. He sneezed, then sneezed again, eyes watering. He pulled the mask away and wiped his face, then pressed it back over his mouth and nose, willing the stickum to seal, but not holding out much hope. The mask was a hand-me-down, given to him by his father. It itched and never sealed quite right because it was the wrong size, but it was all Naylor had. On its side, faded words said, "Discard after 40 hours' use." But Naylor didn't have another, and no one else did either. He was lucky to have a mask at all, even if the microfibers were beginning to shred from repeated scrubbings in the ocean. Sloth, his crew girl, made fun of him whenever he washed the mask, asking why he even bothered. It just made the hellish ductwork hotter and more uncomfortable. There was no point, she said. Sometimes he thought she was right. But Pima's mother told him and Pima to use the masks no matter what, and for sure there was a lot of black grime in the filters when he immersed them in the ocean. That was the black that wasn't in his lungs, Pima's mother said, so he kept on with the mask, even though he felt like he was smothering every time he sucked humid tropic air through the clogged, breath-wet fibers. A voice echoed down into the duct.
"You got the wire?"
Sloth, calling in from where she waited outside.
"Almost done."
Naylor scrambled a little farther into the duct, ripping more staples, hurriedly yanking extra copper loose. The duct's passage went on, but he had enough. He slashed the wire free with the serrated back of his work knife.
"We're good," he shouted.
Sloth's acknowledging shout echoed back.
"Clear!"
The wire whipped away from him, slithering through the crawl spaces, raising dust clouds as it moved. Far down the maze of ducts, Sloth was cranking away at a winding drum. Sweat bright on her skin, blonde hair pasted slick to her face as she sucked the wire out like a rice noodle from a bowl of Chen's soup ration. Naylor took his knife and hacked Bappy's light crew code above the place where he had clipped the wire. The symbol matched the swirling tattoos on Naylor's cheeks, the labor marks that gave him a right to work the wrecks under Bappy's supervision. Naylor took out a bit of powdered paint and spit on it, mixing it in his palm before smearing it over the mark. Now, even from a distance, his scratches gave off an iridescent glow. He used his finger and the remaining paint to write a string of memorized numerals below the symbol, LC57-1844, Bappy's permit code. No one else was competing for this stretch right now, but it was good to mark the territory. Naylor gathered the rest of the aluminum staples and scuttled back through the ducting on hands and knees, skirting weak points where the metal wasn't well supported, listening to his own echoes and thumps and ringing taps against the steel as he hustled out, all his senses testing for signs that the ducts might break. His little phosphor LED showed the dust snake slither where the copper cables had gone before him. He crawled over desiccated rat bodies and their nests. Even here, in the belly of an old oil tanker, there were rats. But these ones had died a long time ago. He crawled over more bones, small ones that came from cats and bits of birds. Feathers and fluff floated in the air. This close to the outside world, the access ducts were a graveyard for all sorts of lost creatures. Ahead, sunlight showed, a glaring brightness. Naylor squinted as he clawed toward the light, thinking that this was what rebirth must be like for the life cult. This climbing toward blazing clean sunshine. And then he spilled out of the duct and onto hot steel decking. He tore off his mask, gasping. Bright tropic sunlight and ocean salt breezes bathed him. All around, sledgehammers rang against iron as swarms of men and women clamored over the ancient oil tanker, tearing it apart. Heavy crews peeled away iron panels with acetylene torches and sent them wafting off the sides like palm leaves, crashing to the beach sands below, where more crews dragged the scavenge above high tide. Light crews, like Naylor's, tore at the ship's small fittings, stripping copper, brass, nickel, aluminum, and stainless steel. Others hunted for hidden petrol and ship oil pockets, bucketing out the valuable fluid. An ant's nest of activity, all dedicated to rendering this extinct ship's bones into something usable for a new world.
"Took you long enough," Sloth said.
She hammered at their spool's securing clips, releasing it from the winding spindle. Her pale skin gleamed in the sunlight, her own swirling work tattoos almost black against the flush of her cheeks. Sweat ran down her neck. Her blonde hair was chopped short, much like his own, to keep it from catching in the thousands of crevices and whirling bits of machinery that studded their workplace.
"We're in deep," Naylor said. "Plenty of servicing wire, but it takes a long time to get to it." "You always got an excuse."
"Quit complaining. We'll make quota."
"We better," Sloth said. "Bappy's saying there's another light crew buying scavenge rights."
Naylor made a face.
"Big surprise." "Yeah, this was too good to last for long. Give me a hand."
Naylor got on the other side of the spool. They lifted it from its spindle, grunting. Together they tipped the spool sideways and let it fall to the rusted deck with a clang. Shoulder to shoulder, they leaned into the weight, legs flexing, teeth gritted. The spool slowly began to roll. Naylor's bare feet burned against the sun-blasted deck. The cant of the ship made for hard pushing. But under their combined effort, the spool slowly rumbled forward, crunching over blistered preservative paint and loosened metal deck plates. From the height of the tanker's deck, Bright Sands Beach stretched into the distance, a tarred expanse of sand and puddled seawater, littered with the savaged bodies of other oil tankers and freighters. Some were completely whole, as if crazy sea captains had simply decided to steer the kilometer-long ships onto the sand and then walked away. Others were flayed and stripped, showing rusty iron girder bones. Hulls lay like chunks of cleavered fish. A conning tower here, a crew quarters there, the prow of an oil tanker pointing straight up to the sky. It was as if the scavenge god had come amongst the ships, slashing and chopping, dicing the huge iron vessels into pieces, and then left the corpses scattered carelessly behind. And wherever the huge ships lay, scavenge gangs like Nailers swarmed like flies, chewing away at iron meat and bones, dragging the old world's flesh up the beach to the scrap weighing scales and the recycling smelters that burned 24/7 for the profit of Lawson and Carlson, the company that made all the cash from the blood and sweat of the shipbreakers. Nailer and Sloth paused for a moment, breathing hard, leaning against the heavy spool. Nailer wiped the sweat out of his eyes. Far out on the horizon, the oily black of the ocean turned blue, reflecting sky and sun. Whitecaps foamed. The air around Nailer was hazed with the black work of shoreline smelters, but out there, beyond the smoke, he could see sails. The new clipper ships, replacements for the massive coal and oil-burning wrecks that he and his crew worked to destroy all day long. Gall-white sails, carbon fiber hulls, and faster than anything except a maglev train. Nailer's eyes followed a clipper ship as it sliced across the waters, sleek and fast and completely out of reach. It was possible that some of the copper on his spool would eventually sail away on a ship like that, first hauled by train to the Orleans, then transferred to a clipper's cargo hold, where it would be carried across the ocean to whatever people or country could afford the scavenge. Bappy had a poster of a clipper ship from Libeskind, Brown, and Mahanraj. It connected to his reusable wall calendar and showed a clipper with high-altitude parasails extended far above it, sails that Bappy said could reach the jet streams and yank a clipper across smooth ocean at more than 55 knots, flying above the waves on hydrofoils, tearing through foam and salt water, slicing across the ocean to Africa and India, to the Europeans and the Nipponese. Nailer stared at the distant sails hungrily, wondering at the places they went, and whether any of them were better than his own.
"Nailer! Sloth! Where the hell have you been?"
Nailer jerked from his reverie. Pima was waving up at them from the tanker's lower deck, looking annoyed.
"We're waiting for you, crew boy."
"Boss girl on the prowl," Sloth muttered.
Nailer grimaced. Pima was the oldest of them, and it made her bossy. Even his own long friendship with her didn't shelter him when they were behind quota. He and Sloth turned their attention back to the spool. With another series of grunts, they heaved it over the ship's warped decking and rolled it to where a rudimentary crane had been set up. They hitched the spool to rusted iron hooks, then grabbed the crane cable and jumped aboard the spool as it descended, swaying and spinning to the lower deck. Pima and the rest of the light crew swarmed around them as they hit bottom. They unclipped the spool and rolled it over to where they'd set up their stripping operation near the oil tanker's prow. Lengths of discarded insulation from the electrical wire lay everywhere, along with the gleaming rolls of copper that they'd collected, stacked in careful lines and marked with Bappy's light crew claim mark, the same swirled symbol that scarred all their cheeks. Everyone started unreeling sections of Nailer's new hull, parting the lengths out amongst themselves. They worked quickly, accustomed to one another and the labor. Pima, their boss girl, taller than the rest and filling out like a woman, black as oil and hard as iron. Sloth, skinny and pale, bones and knots of knees and dirty blonde hair, the next candidate for duct and scuttle work when Nailer got too big. her pale skin almost permanently sunburned and peeling. Moon Girl, the shade of brown rice, whose nail-shed mother had died with the last run of malaria and who worked light crew harder than anyone else because she'd seen the alternative. Her ears and lips and nose decorated with scavenged steel wire that she'd driven through her flesh in the hope that no one would ever want her the way they'd wanted her mother. Tick-tock, nearsighted and always squinting at everything around him, almost as black as Pima, but nowhere near as smart. Fast with his hands as long as you told him what to do with them. And he never got bored. Pearlie, the Hindu who told them stories about Shiva and Kali and Krishna, and who was lucky enough to have both a mother and a father who worked oil scavenge. Black hair and dark tropic skin and a hand missing three fingers from an accident with the winding drum. And then there was Naylor. Some people, like Pearlie, knew who they were and where they came from. Pima knew her mother came up from the last of the islands across the gulf. Pearlie told everyone who would listen that he was 100% Indian. Hindu Marwari through and through. Even Sloth said that her people were Irish. Naylor was nothing like that. He had no idea what he was. Half of something and a quarter of something else. Brown skin and black hair like his dead mother, but with weird, pale blue eyes like his father. Pearlie had taken one look at Naylor's pale eyes and claimed he was spawned by demons, but Pearlie made things up all the time. He said Pima was Kali reincarnated, which was why her skin was so black, and why she was so damn mean when they were behind quota. Even so, the truth was that Naylor shared his father's eyes and his father's wiry build, and Richard Lopez was a demon for sure. No one could argue that. Sober, the man was scary. Drunk, he was a demon. Naylor unwound a section of wire and squatted down on the blazing deck. He crimped the wire with his pliers and ripped off a sleeve of insulation, revealing the shining copper core. Did it again? And again. Pima squatted beside him with her own length of wire.
"Took you long enough to bring out this load?"
Naylor shrugged.
"Nothing's close in anymore. I had to go a long way to find it."
"That's what you always say."
"You want to go into the hole? You can."
"I'll go in,"
Sloth volunteered. Naylor gave her a dirty look. Pearlie snorted.
"You don't have the sense of a half-man. You'd get lost like Jackson Boy, and then we'd get no scavenge at all."
Sloth made a sharp gesture.
"Grind it, Pearlie. I never get lost."
"Even in the dark, when all the ducks look the same?"
Pearlie spat toward the edge of the ship, missed, and hit the rail instead.
"Crews on Deep Blue 3 heard Jackson Boy calling out for days. Couldn't find him, though. Little lice spider finally just dried up and died."
"Bad way to go," Tick-tock commented. "Thirsty, in the dark, alone."
"Shut up, you two," Moon Girl said. "You want the dead to hear you calling?"
Pearlie shrugged.
"We're just saying Naylor always makes quota."
"Shit!"
Sloth ran a hand through sweaty blonde hair.
"I'd get 20 times the scavenge Naylor gets."
Naylor laughed. "Go on in, then. We'll see if you come out alive."
"You already filled the spool."
"Tough grind for you, then." Pima tapped Naylor's shoulder.
"I'm serious about the scavenge. We had downtime waiting for you."
Naylor met Pima's eyes. "I make quota. You don't like my work? Then go in yourself." Pima pursed her lips, annoyed. It was an empty suggestion, and they both knew it. She'd gotten too big, and had the scabs and scars on her spine and elbows and knees to prove it. Light crew needed small bodies. Most kids got bounced off the crew by the time they hit their mid-teens, even if they starved themselves to keep their size down. If Pima weren't such a good crew boss, she'd already be on the beach, hungry and begging for anything that came her way. Instead, she had another year, maybe, to bulk up enough to compete against hundreds of others for openings in heavy crew. But her time was running out, and everyone knew it. Pima said,
"You wouldn't be so cocky if your dad wasn't such a whipwire. You'd be in the same position as me."
"Well, that's one thing I can thank him for, then."
If his father was any indication, Naylor would never be huge. Fast, maybe, but never big. TikTok's dad claimed that none of them would grow that big anyway, because of the calories they didn't eat. Said that people up in Seascape Boston were still tall, though. Had plenty of money and plenty of food. Never went hungry. Got fat and tall. Naylor had felt his belly up against his spine enough times that he wondered what it would be like to have so much food. Wondered how it would feel to never wake in the middle of the night with his teeth chewing on his lips, fooling himself into thinking that he was about to eat meat. But it was a stupid fantasy. Seascape Boston sounded a little too much like Christian heaven, or the way the scavenge god promised a life of ease if you could just find the right offering to burn with your body when you went to his scales. Either way, you had to die to get there. The work went on. Naylor stripped more wire, tossing the junk insulation over the ship's side. The sun beat down on everyone. Their skins gleamed. Salt sweat jewels soaked their hair and dripped into their eyes. Their hands turned slick with work, and their crew tattoos shone like intricate knots on their flushed faces. For a little while they talked and joked, but gradually fell silent, working the rhythm of scavenge, building piles of copper for whoever was rich enough to afford it.
"Boss man coming!"
The warning call came up from the waters below. Everyone hunkered down, looking busy, waiting to see who would appear at the rail. If it was someone else's boss, they could relax. Bappy. Naylor grimaced as their crew boss clambered up over the rail, huffing. His black hair gleamed and his pot belly made it hard for him to climb. But there was money involved, so the bastard managed. Bappy leaned against the rail, regaining his breath. Sweat darkened the tank top that he wore for work. Yellow and brown stains of whatever curry or sandwich he'd eaten for lunch dotted the material. It made Naylor hungry just looking at all the food on Bappy's chest. But there was no meal coming until evening, and there was no point looking at food Bappy would never share. Bappy's quick brown eyes studied them, alert for signs that they'd gone lazy and weren't serious about scavenging for quota. Even though none of them had been idle before, with Bappy watching, they all worked faster, trying to demonstrate they were worth keeping. Bappy had been light crew himself once. He knew their ways, knew the tricks of laziness. It made him dangerous.
"What you got?"
he asked Pima. Pima glanced up, squinting into the sun.
"Copper! Lots! Naylor found new ducks that Gorgeous's crew missed."
Bappy's teeth flashed white, showing the front gap where a fight had cost him his incisors.
"How much?"
Pima jerked her head at Naylor, giving him permission.
"Maybe 100, 120 kilos so far," Naylor estimated. "There's more down there." "Yeah?"
Bappy nodded.
"Well, hurry and get it out. Don't worry about stripping it. Just make sure you get it all."
He looked out toward the horizon.
"Larson and Carlson says a storm's coming. Big one. We're going to be off the wrecks for a couple days. I want enough wire that you can work it on the sand."
Naylor stifled his distaste at the thought of going back down into the blackness, but Bappy must have caught something of his expression.
"Got a problem, Naylor? You think a storm means you get to sit on your ass?"
Bappy waved toward the work camps strung along the beach's jungle edge.
"You think I can't get 100 other lice biters to take your place?
There's kids down there who'd let me cut out an eye if it would get them up on a wreck.
Pima interceded.
He's got no problem. You want the wire, we'll get it. No problem.
She glared at Naylor.
We're your crew, boss. No problem at all.
They all nodded emphatically. Naylor got to his feet and handed the rest of the wire over to Tick-Tock.
No problem, boss, he repeated.
Bappy scowled at Naylor.
You sure you vouch for him, Pima? I can put a knife through this one's crude tats and dump him on the sand.
He's good scavenge, she said. We're ahead on quota 'cause of him.
Yeah?
Bappy relented slightly.
Well, you're boss girl. I don't interfere.
He eyed Naylor.
You watch it, boy. I know how your kind thinks, always imagining you're going to be a lucky strike, pretending you'll find some big old oil pocket and never work another day in your life. Your old man was a lazy bastard like that. Look how he turned out.
Naylor felt a rising anger.
I don't talk about your dad.
Bappy laughed.
What? You gonna fight me, boy? Try and pig-stick me from behind the way your old man would?
Bappy touched his knife.
Pima vouches for you. But I'm wondering if you got the sense to know how much of a favor she's doing.
Let it go, Naylor,
Pima urged.
Your dad's not worth it.
Bappy watched, smiling slightly. His hand lingered close to his knife. Bappy had all the cards, and they both knew it. Naylor ducked his head and forced down his anger.
I'll get your scavenge, boss. No problem.
Bappy gave Naylor a sharp nod.
Smarter than your old man, then.
He turned to the rest of the crew.
Listen up, everyone. We don't have a lot of time. If you get the extra scavenge out before the storm, I'll bonus you. There's another light crew coming on soon. We don't want to leave them any easy pickings, right?
He grinned feral, and they all nodded back.
No easy pickings, they echoed.
Chapter 2 Naylor was farther into the tanker than he'd ever been. No light crew marks gleamed in the darkness. No evidence of any other duct and scuttle workers marred the dust and rat droppings of the passage. Overhead, three separate lines of copper wire ran ahead of him, a lucky find that meant he might even make Bappy's quota. But Naylor was having a hard time caring. His mask kept clogging, and in the rush to dive back into the hole, he'd forgotten to renew his LED paint patch. Now he regretted it bitterly, as darkness closed in. He ripped down more tangled wire. The passage seemed to be getting narrower, even as the amount of copper increased. He eased forward, and the duct creaked all around, protesting his weight. Petroleum fumes burned in his lungs. He wished he could just quit and crawl out. If he turned around now, he could be back on deck in 20 minutes, breathing clean air. But what if he didn't have enough scavenge? Bappy already didn't like him, and Sloth was too damn eager to steal his slot. Her words still lingered in his mind. I'll get 20 times the scavenge he does. A warning. He had competition now. It didn't matter that Pima vouched for him. If Naylor failed to pull quota, Bappy would slash out his work tattoos and give Sloth a try. And Pima couldn't do a damn thing about it. No one was worth keeping if they didn't make a profit. Naylor wriggled onward, driven by Sloth's hungry words. More and more copper came down in his hands. His LED faded to black. He was alone. Nothing but a trail of loose-ended electrical cable to lead him out. For the first time, he feared he might not be able to find his way. The tanker was huge, one of the workhorses of the oil age, almost a floating city in itself, and now he was deep in its guts. When Jackson Boy died, no one had been able to find him. They'd heard him banging away on the metal, calling out, but no one could locate a way into the double hull where he'd trapped himself. A year later, heavy crews cut open a section of iron, and the little lice spider's mummified body had popped out like a pill from a blister pack. Dry like leaves, rattling as it hit the deck, rat-chewed and desiccated. "Don't think about it. You'll just bring his ghost onto the ship." The duct was tightening, squeezing around his shoulders. Naylor began to imagine himself stuck like a cork in a bottle, pinned in the darkness, never able to get free. He strained forward and yanked down another length of wire. Enough. More than enough. Naylor hacked Bappy's light crew code into the duck's metal with his knife, doing it blind, but at least making a stab at saving the territory for later. He tightened himself into a ball, knees against chin, elbows and spine scraping the duct walls as he turned himself around. Folding tighter, letting out his breath, fighting off images of corks and bottles and Jackson Boy caught in the darkness dying alone. Tighter, turning, listening to the duct creak as he squeezed against metal. He came free, gasping relief. In another year, he'd be too big for this work, and Sloth would take his niche for sure. He might be small for his age, but eventually everyone got too big for light crew. Naylor squirmed back down the duct, rolling the wire ahead of him. The loudest sound was his own rasping breath in the filter mask. He paused and reached ahead for the loosened wire, confirming that it was still there, still leading him out to the light. "Don't panic. You took this wire down yourself. You just need to keep following it." A scuttling noise echoed behind him. Naylor froze, skin crawling. A rat, probably. But it sounded big. Unbidden, another image intruded. Jackson Boy. Naylor could imagine the dead crew boy's ghost in the ducts with him, creeping through the darkness, stalking him, reaching for his ankles with dry bone fingers. Naylor fought down panic. It was just superstition. Paranoia was for Moon Girl, not for him. But the fear was inside him now. He started shoving his scavenged wire aside, suddenly desperate for clean air and light. He'd crawl out, renew his LED paint, and then come back when he could see what was what. Screw Sloth and Bappy. He needed air. Naylor started squeezing around his tangled bundle of copper. The duct creaked dangerously as he squirmed past, protesting the collected weight of himself and the wire. Stupid to gather so much. Should have cut it in sections and let Pima and Sloth spool it out. But he'd been hurrying, and now, of all things, he'd collected too much. Naylor clawed forward, jamming the wire aside. Felt a flush of triumph as he kicked the last tangling wires off his legs. The duct groaned loudly and shuddered under him. Naylor froze. All around the duct pinged and creaked. It sank slightly, tilting. The whole thing was on the verge of collapse. Naylor's frantic activity and extra weight had weakened it. Naylor spread out his weight and lay still, heart pounding, trying to sense the duct's intentions. The metal went quiet. Naylor waited, listening. Finally, he eased forward, delicately shifting his weight. Metal shrieked. The duct dropped out from under him. Naylor scrambled for handholds as his world gave way. His fingers seized scavenged wire. For a second, it held, suspending him above an infinite pit. Then the wire tore loose. He plummeted. "I don't want to be a Jackson Boy. I don't want to be a Jackson Boy. I don't..." He hit liquid, warm and viscous. Blackness swallowed him with barely a ripple. Chapter 3
Swim, you bastard. Swim, you bastard. Swim, you bastard. Swim!
Naylor sank like a stone through warm, reeking liquid. It was like trying to swim through thick air instead of water. No matter how hard he fought, the warmth gave way under him, sucking him deeper.
Why can't I swim?
He was a good swimmer, had never worried about drowning in the ocean, even in heavy surf. But now he kept sinking, his hand tangled in something solid, the copper wire. He grabbed for it, hoping it was still connected to the ducts above. It slithered through his fingers, slick and slimy.
Oil!
Naylor fought off panic. It was impossible to swim in oil. It just swallowed you like quicksand. He clawed again for the copper and looped the wiring around his hand to counteract its slickness. His sinking stopped. He began hauling himself back up out of the muck. His lungs screamed for air. Hand over hand, he dragged himself higher. He fought the urge to breathe, to give up and fill his lungs with oil. It would be so easy. He came out of the oil like a whale surfacing, oil sheeting off his face. He opened his mouth to breathe. Nothing. Just a strange pressure on his face.
The mask.
Naylor tore it off, gasping. Sucked air. Petroleum vapors burned his lungs, but he could breathe. He used the mask's clean interior to scrape at his eyes, clearing oil away. He opened them to an intense stinging and burning. Tears filled his eyes. He blinked rapidly. Blackness all around. Pitch blackness. He was in some kind of oil reservoir. Maybe a leaked pool or some secondary storage chamber. Or he had no idea where he was in the ship. If he was really unlucky, he was in one of the main oil reservoirs. He finished wiping his eyes and tossed away the now useless mask. The fumes were dizzying. He forced himself to breathe shallowly as he clung to the wire. His skin burned with its petroleum coating. Hammers rang faintly in the distance. Workers banging away at the ship, all unaware of his emergency. His hands started to slide off the wire. Naylor grabbed desperately for a better handhold, hooking his arm through the tangles. Overhead, the duct creaked alarmingly. A tingle of fear ran through him. A few strands of wire that stretched to that high overhead duct were all that kept him from drowning. But the safety was temporary. Soon the duct would give way, and he'd sink again, his lungs filling with oil, thrashing and gurgling.
Calm down, you idiot.
Naylor considered trying to swim again, but discarded the idea. It was just his mind playing tricks, fantasizing that the liquid all around was actually water. But oil was different. It didn't support a body, no matter how much you wished. It just swallowed you up. Naylor had seen a man on heavy crew drown that way. He'd thrashed briefly in the oil, shouting and panicked, then slipped under, long before anyone could throw him a rope.
Don't panic. Think.
Naylor reached out, fingers straining into the blackness, reaching for anything, a wall, some bit of floating junk, anything to tell him where he was. His hand found nothing but air and mucky oil. His movements made the duct creak overhead. The wire sank slightly as something gave way. Naylor held his breath, expecting to go under, but the wire stopped sinking.
Pima!
He shouted. His voice echoed back fast, bouncing all around. Naylor clutched the wire, surprised. Judging from the sound, he wasn't in as big a space as he'd thought. There were walls nearby.
Pima!
Again, the fast echo. This wasn't some giant oil tank. It was much, much smaller. Heartened by the impression of walls, Naylor reached out again, But this time, instead of using a hand, he stretched out into the darkness with his toes. After two tries, rough metal met his skin. A wall of some sort, and something else. Naylor sucked in a grateful breath. A thin pipe running along its breadth. It was only a centimeter in diameter, but still, it had to be better than a tangle of copper dangling from a failing duct. Without waiting to reconsider, Naylor lunged for the wall. As he moved, the duct overhead shrieked and gave way. Naylor sank, thrashing and scrabbling for the thin pipe. His slick hands touched the wall, slipped off. Caught. He dragged himself up against the wall, clinging by his fingertips. They trembled with the strain. The oil didn't give him any float at all. Already, he was tiring. He couldn't support himself for long. Quickly, Naylor slid along the wall, seeking better handholds. If he was lucky, maybe there was a ladder. He reached a bend in the pipe. It turned sharply downward and disappeared into the oil. Naylor stifled a sob of frustration. He was going to die. Don't panic. If he started crying, he was screwed. He needed to think, not bawl like a baby, but already his mind felt drunk and scattered. The fumes were overwhelming. Naylor could see how this would end. He'd hang on for a little longer, inhaling more and more of the poisonous air, clinging like a bug to the wall, but eventually he'd get too tired and high, and he'd slip off. How could he die in such a stupid way? This wasn't even a storage tank, just some room full of pooled waste oil. It was a joke, really. Lucky Strike had found an oil pocket on a ship and bought his way free. Naylor had found one, and it was going to kill him. I'm going to drown in goddamn money. Naylor almost laughed at the thought. No one knew exactly how much oil Lucky Strike had found and smuggled out. The man had done it slow, over time, sneaking it out bucket by bucket until he had enough to buy out his indenture and burn off his work tattoos. But he'd had enough left over to set himself up as a labor broker selling slots into the very heavy crews that he'd escaped. Just a little oil had done so much for Lucky Strike, and Naylor was up to his neck in the damn stuff.
Naylor!
The voice was faint, far away.
Sloth!
Naylor's voice cracked with relief.
I'm here! Down here! I fell through!
He kicked in his excitement, and the oil rippled around him. A bit of green light illuminated the gloom above. Sloth's scavenge features peered through the duct hole, an LED smear on her forehead.
Damn! You screwed big time, Naylor?
She asked.
Yeah, big time screwed.
He grinned weakly.
Pima sent me in for you.
Tell her I need rope. A long pause.
Pappy won't do it.
Why? Another long silence.
He wants copper. Sent me in for copper. Before the storm comes.
Just drop me a rope.
Gotta make quota.
Her glow face disappeared.
Pima sent stuff, case I found you. Case you needed help.
Naylor grimaced. Another long pause as they both peered at the gloom with her phosphor green paint lighting. Nothing. No ladders, no doors, just a rusty room filled with black murk.
What's wrong with you?
Sloth asked.
You broke something?
Naylor shook his head before remembering she probably couldn't see him well.
I'm swimming in oil. You tell Bappy I'm up to my neck in oil. Thousands of gallons. It's worth his while to get me out. There's a lot of oil for him here.
Another pause.
Yeah? A lot?
Naylor realized with a chill that Sly Sloth was calculating the advantages.
Don't think you can do a lucky strike, he called up.
Lucky strike did it, she responded.
We're crew, Naylor said, trying to keep his voice from showing fear. You tell Pima there's oil. You tell her there's a secret stash. If you don't, I'll haunt you like Jackson Boy and come back and gut you while you're sleeping.
Silence. Sloth. Thinking. Naylor felt a sudden wash of hatred for her. The skinny, starved girl perched up there had all the power in the world to help or kill. To tell Bappy, at least, there was something to be gained from Naylor's survival, and yet there she sat. He called up,
Sloth?
Shut up,
she said.
I'm thinking.
We're crew, he reminded her. We swore blood oath.
But he knew the calculations she was making, her clever mind working the angles, sensing the great pool of wealth, the secret stash that she might pillage later, if fates and the Rust Saint worked in her favor. He wanted to scream at her, to grab her and drag her down, teach her what it felt like to die sucking oil. But he couldn't yell at her, couldn't piss her off. He needed her, needed to convince her to help him survive.
We'll keep it secret, he offered. We can lucky strike together.
Another pause. Then she said,
You said yourself you're swimming in it. Soon as anyone sees you, they know you found a pocket.
He grimaced. Too damn smart. That was the problem with girls like Sloth. Too damn smart for his own good.
We're crew, he said again, but he suspected it was pointless. He knew her too well, knew all of them too well. They'd all starved. They'd all talked about what they'd do if they ever found a lucky strike. And here Sloth had been given one. Chances like this didn't just come along. Sloth had to make her gamble. It was her chance.
Please, he prayed. Please let her be good like Pima. Like Pima and her mom, let her not be like Dad. Fates, please don't let her be like Dad.
Sloth interrupted his whispered prayers.
Pima says I'm supposed to hook you up good if I find you.
You found me.
Yeah, that's for sure.
A rustling.
Here's food and water.
A shadow fell through the green glow of her forehead phosphor. It hit with a splash. Naylor could just see pale objects floating on the surface, starting to sink. He stretched for them, trying to keep his hand on the wall, managed to snag a water bottle before it disappeared. Everything else was already gone. The blackness of the room closed in on him again as Sloth disappeared.
"Thanks for nothing!"
he shouted after her, but she was already gone. He had no idea if Sloth would actually report to Pima, or if she'd just hurry back, dragging Copper, determined to replace him and think of some way to claim the oil prize all to herself. For certain, she wouldn't tell Bappy. Bappy would just call it Light Crew Scavenge and keep it for himself. That meant they had hours more Copper work to prepare for the storm. And that meant he had hours to wait, even if Pima knew where he was and that he needed help. With one slippery hand and his teeth, Naylor managed to open the plastic bottle and drink while he clung to the wall. He swished the first mouthful and spat it out, trying to clear the oil and gunk from his mouth, and then drank, hard and fast, gulping. Grateful. Unaware until the water was pouring into him how thirsty he'd been. He swallowed the rest greedily, then set the bottle floating in the blackness. If he died, this would be the last thing of him on the surface. A few scrabbling sounds drifted down from above, scraping and tearing.
Sloth?
The sound stopped, then started again.
Come on, Sloth! Help me out!
He didn't know why he bothered. She had made her decision. As far as she was concerned, he was already a corpse. He listened as she busied herself with stripping out the rest of the copper. His fingers weakened. The oil crept up around his chin. Fates, he was tired. He wondered if Jackson Boy had also been betrayed by his crew, if that was why the lice biter hadn't been found until a year later. Maybe someone had let him die on purpose. You're not going to die. But he was lying to himself. He was going to drown without a ladder or a door. Naylor's heart suddenly beat faster. If this was some room accidentally filled with oil, then there had to be doors. But they'd all be down below the surface. He'd have to dive down and risk not making it back up. Dangerous. You'll drown anyway. Sloth's not going to save you. That was the real truth. He could hang on for a little longer, getting weaker and weaker, but eventually his fingers would fail and he'd slip off. You're dead already. It was a curiously liberating thought. He really had nothing to lose. Naylor slid slowly along the wall, questing down into the murk with his toes, feeling for some bump or ledge that would tell him a door lay below. The first time, he found nothing, but the second, he let himself sink lower, oil lapping up around his jaw. His toes brushed something. He tilted his nose to the sky, letting the oil lap higher, up around his cheeks, closing around his mouth and nose. A ledge. A rim of metal. Naylor ran his toe along its width. It could be the top of a doorway, he guessed. It wasn't much more than 3 feet wide. The ledge itself was a boon. He could almost rest, letting his toes cling to it, taking some of the pressure off his trembling fingers. The ledge felt like a palace. You can rest now, he thought. You can wait for Pima. Sloth will tell her you're down here. You can wait it out. He killed the hope. Maybe Pima would come save him. Probably, though, Sloth wouldn't say anything about him at all. He was on his own. Naylor balanced on the ledge, on the edge of decision. Live or die, he thought. Live or die. He dove. Chapter 4. In a way, the black muck of the oil was no worse than the blackness above. Naylor let his hands do the work of seeing. He quested down along the rim of the door, sinking deeper, reading its outline. His hands touched a wheel lock. Naylor's heart surged with relief. The wheel was the kind used to hold back seawater if a hull breached, a solid, airtight door. He tugged at the wheel, trying to remember which way to turn it. It didn't budge. He fought down panic. Yanked on the wheel again. Nothing. It wouldn't move. And he was running out of air. Naylor kicked for the surface, using the wheel to launch himself upward, praying that he'd make it. He surfaced, flailing. His fingers scrabbled for the thin pipe, miraculously caught hold before he sank again. He wiped frantically at his face, clearing his nose and keeping his eyes shut. He blew air through his lips, pushing oil away from his mouth, sucked in a fume-laden breath. With his eyes still closed, he felt again for the door frame with his toes. He thought he'd lost it for a second, but then he scraped rust, and a moment later he was perched again. He smiled tightly, a door with a wheel, a chance if he could make the damn thing turn. More scrabbling echoed from above. Sloth at work still. He called up to her.
Hey, Sloth! I got me a way out. I'm coming for you, crew girl!
The movement stopped.
You hear me?
His voice echoed all around.
I'm getting out, and I'm coming for you!
Yeah?
Sloth responded.
You want me to go get Pima?
Mockery laced her voice. Naylor again wished he could reach up and yank her down into the oil. Instead, Naylor made his voice reasonable.
If you go get Pima now, I'll forget you were going to let me drown.
A long pause. Finally, Sloth said,
It's too late, right?
She went on.
I know you, Naylor. You'll tell Pima no matter what, and then I'm off crew and someone else buys in.
Another pause. Then she said,
It's all fates now. If you got a way out, I'll see you on the outside. You get your revenge then.
Naylor scowled. It had been worth a try. He thought about the door waiting below him. It might be locked from the far side. Maybe that was why the wheel didn't turn. Maybe. If it's locked, you die. Same as everything. No use worrying about it. He took a deep breath and went down again. This time with more air, and knowing what he was trying to do, he found the wheel quickly and then took his time working it. He braced his feet on the hatch frame, felt around for the latch handle. First he needed to unseal with the wheel, then he needed to yank the handle. He tried to turn the wheel again. Nothing. He leaned against it, bracing himself sideways and using his legs, fighting to keep a grip. Nothing. He hooked his elbow through the wheel. He was running out of air, but he didn't want to give up. He pulled, pulled again, harder, the wheel digging into the crook of his arm. His lungs were bursting. The wheel turned. Naylor redoubled his efforts. Gold and blue and red pulses filled his vision. The wheel turned again, loosening. He was frantic for air, but he stayed down, fighting the urge to kick for the surface, turning the wheel faster and faster until his lungs were heaving. He launched himself upward again, hope running wild as he surfaced. Eager now, he hyperventilated a final time, huffing high in the blackness. Dove. Spinning, spinning, spinning the wheel, his lungs bursting. All or nothing, reckless with the need to get out. Naylor yanked the latch handle. For a second he worried that the door swung inward and that he would never be able to drag the thing open against the pressure of oil holding it closed. The door blew open. Naylor was sucked through in a black torrent. He slammed into a wall, curled into a ball as he tumbled. Oil roared around him. His forehead smashed against metal, and he almost took a breath, but forced himself to curl tighter, letting himself be turned and swirled and bounced and slammed through ship corridors like a jellyfish thrown by breakers onto a reef. He blasted into open air. Naylor's stomach dropped out of him. Free fall. Involuntarily, his eyes opened, stinging oil and scalding sun. A mere bright ocean, almost white with its intensity. Blue waves rushed up to meet him. He had only a second to twist. He smashed into water. Sea salt swallowed him. The surge and swell of an oily sea. The roll of breakers. Naylor surged upward, kicking for the surface. Broke out into sunlight and waves, gasping. He sucked air, flooding his lungs with shining clean oxygen, starved for all the life he'd been sure he'd lost. Above him, a tear in the tanker's hull still spewed oil, marking where the ship had vomited him into open air. Black streams of crude traced down the ship's hide, running in slick rivulets. 50 feet of fall into shallow water, and he was alive. Naylor started to laugh. "I'm alive," he shouted. And then he was screaming, feeling a flood of victory and released terror, drunk on sunshine and waves and the people staring at him from shore. He swam for the beach, still laughing and drunk on survival. Waves caught him and pushed him into the shore. He realized that he'd been doubly lucky. If the tide hadn't come in, he would have slammed against sand instead of plunging into water. Naylor crawled out of the breakers and stood. His legs were weak from so long swimming, but he was standing on dry land, and he was alive. He laughed madly at Bappy and Lee and Rain and the hundreds of other laborers and crew gangs, all of them staring at him dumbstruck. "I'm alive!" he shouted at them.
I'm alive!
They all said nothing, simply stared. Naylor was about to shout again, but something in their faces made him look down. Seafoam lapped around his ankles, rust and bits of wire, shells and insulation, and intermixed with the ocean froth, his blood.